From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. 30 years ago, on April 30th, 1975, Viet Cong tanks smashed through the gates of the presidential palace in Saigon. Washington's South Vietnamese allies fell, and U.S. helicopters retreated with the last loads of Americans from atop the U.S. embassy.
5-3 Bravo, 5-3 over.
The Americans replaced the French, and this presence here ended this morning about 3 hours ago, as a U.S. Marine helicopter took out the last group of Marines from the roof of the U.S. embassy.
Some Vietnamese people held up their children to Americans to take them over the fence.
There were desperate scenes with families separated and crying out for help. We were not to be left behind.
The Saigon government surrendered unconditionally to the Viet Cong, ending 30 years of bloodshed.
58,000 Americans died in the Vietnam War, the war that failed. More than a million Vietnamese died, as many as 3 million. Tonight we remember the fall of Saigon, we consider the lessons of the Vietnam War, and we look at what the lessons of that war do or do not say about the conflict in Iraq today. We'll talk with two Vietnam veterans, four-star General Barry McCaffrey and former Secretary of the Navy James Webb, about the war they fought and lost, with Francis Fitzgerald, Pulitzer Prize-winning author of Fire in the Lake, with best-selling author Jonathan Schell, who covered the war for the New Yorker magazine, and with Vietnam War correspondent, now columnist, David Greenway, who was in Saigon 30 years ago when it fell to the North. Tonight on Point, the 30th anniversary of the fall of Saigon, lessons from the Vietnam War and their relevance in Iraq today. You can join the conversation 30 years on. What's your takeaway from America's failure in Vietnam? What might, what should the Vietnam War tell us about the war in Iraq? You can join us tonight at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Joining me now from North Haven, Maine, is David Greenway. He was a longtime Vietnam War correspondent for Time Magazine and the Washington Post. He was in Saigon when the city fell April 30th, 1975. He received a Bronze Star for trying to save a Marine during the Tet Offensive in 1968. He's former foreign editor, national editor, and editorial page editor for the Boston Globe. He is currently the Globe's foreign affairs columnist. David, thank you very much for being with us tonight.
Thank you.
David, I hope you'll ride along with us as we hear from a number of people this evening. We want to get your thoughts as well, but I wish you'd be kind enough to begin in just a couple of minutes, if you can, with a sense of that day 30 years ago tomorrow.
Well, this day, the 29th, began very early because we could hear gunfire, shells coming in on the city and rockets. And some of us had little radios that we could pick up the embassy frequency. And towards dawn, we heard that two Marines had been killed at the airport and that the airport was under artillery fire. So we knew then that there wouldn't be any orderly retreat on airplanes, that it would have to be a helicopter evacuation. And some of us wandered over to the American embassy. And as the afternoon went on, desperate Vietnamese began to crowd in towards the embassy and pressing up against the fence and handing little notes and saying, could you please get hold of the CIA and have them take me, and anyone who knew somebody at the embassy would be trying to slip notes through. And this desperate, crying, hopeless expressions on their faces as they crowded in, and then people tried to try to climb over this big gate, and Marines would push them back and sometimes hit them back with rifle butts, and just a complete, chaotic, horrible scene. I remember some of the embassy people started to burn American currency.
Because why not? It was too much to carry out.
Too much to carry out.
And there was pandemonium. David, there's a lot more we want to hear from you tonight, but I've got a bit of pre-tape here with General Barry McCaffrey. I hope you'll let me go to that for a minute, then I want to get your response if I could. I did speak earlier today with General Barry McCaffrey. He is former Commander-in-Chief of U.S. Armed Forces Southern Command. He was U.S. Drug Czar under Bill Clinton. When he retired in 1996, he was the most highly decorated and youngest four-star general in the U.S. Army. He served two combat tours in South Vietnam as a platoon leader, winning two Distinguished Service Crosses, two Silver Stars, and three Purple Hearts. He now teaches at West Point. I asked General McCaffrey what the 30-year anniversary of the fall of Saigon commemorates for him.
Well, you know, enormous sacrifice, sadness. I think many of us, 3.5 million of us that served in Vietnam, actually don't dwell on it. You know, most of us who went there and fought thought we did the right thing in response to what our dads or the draft board or the Army asked us to do. So there's not a nostalgia for the war, but people like me, I served with the Vietnamese. I spoke the language. I loved the country. They ended up in an age of darkness. Millions of them fled to sea. Hundreds of thousands were imprisoned for a decade. It was a defeat of monumental proportions. And so it's a sad memory for many of us.
And the lessons of the Vietnam War that you carry these 30 years after the fall of Saigon?
One of them is the arrogance of political leadership. Secretary McNamara certainly has become a symbol over the years for those of us who were combatants in that war that he was prosecuting, where in his books he claims he understood we couldn't use it or win the conflict. So he ground out 150,000 wounded in action, nearly 60,000 killed, and yet in his own mind didn't see a successful outcome to the war. So lesson number one for many of us, if you're going to employ military power, choose a strategy that you are confident will win. And I think the second lesson is you've got to be transparent with the American people. You've got to tell them what you're trying to achieve and the cost that it may well entail. And if you do, you can probably keep them with you. Otherwise, they think you're lying to them, as I think happened during the closing years of Vietnam. They'll lose faith in the leadership.
So was it wrong to go into Vietnam, or are you simply saying the war was wrongly pursued?
I think it was badly executed, to be honest, and I understand the fears that affected those at the top, fear of widening the war to the North Vietnamese, an open conventional war, fear of involving the Chinese, fear of horizontal escalation to the Soviets with potentially nuclear weapons in the background. So they were under a lot of pressure. There's no question in my mind that the communist ideology brought nothing but untold misery. Economically, it didn't work. It was sort of a goofy philosophy. But it also, to a large extent, enslaved free people. So I'm not going in to stand with the Vietnamese. It was probably the right thing to do. And it had a positive impact to some extent, one could argue, on the larger confrontation, the Cold War confrontation. It was just badly done.
General McCaffrey, I wish you'd turn with us now to Iraq and bring those lessons of Vietnam to bear on what you see having transpired there. Did you support the invasion? How do you think it's going? And how should or shouldn't Vietnam inform the way we think about Iraq?
Vietnam is a much overused metaphor. It was so totally different from the challenges we face in the Middle East right now in so many ways. I mean, in Iraq, we were facing, in the judgment of most of us, first of all, vital national security interests. Oil is at stake. Our allies, the Saudis, the Kuwaitis, the Persian Gulf, had been at risk from this aggressive nation. He had murdered hundreds of thousands of his own people. We believed then, and I continue to believe, that he was a threat to the region and to our own long-term interests. The intervention was the right thing to do, bringing down this brutal regime, freed the Iraqi people potentially, and certainly reduced the threat to the region. Now, having said that, going forward is going to be pretty tough. These are factionalized problems we're facing. It's hard to imagine anything but a loose federal government as an outcome in Iraq. You know, the bitterness between the Shia, the Sunni, the Kurds is hardly going to be erased by a year or three of democracy building. There's probably an argument, though, that, again, this war was, which I thought was the right thing to do, many would argue was very badly executed by, particularly by the Pentagon leadership.
You've been very critical of Donald Rumsfeld on occasion.
Yeah, I think his misjudgments were serious, and in fact, he's gotten us in a lot of trouble. Now I think we're working our way out of it. The question is, do we have the political will to stay with this construction effort to build a new political system, a new economy, a new security force.
General McCaffrey, let me just ask you on that. Do you have a fear of a Vietnam-style outcome? Let's say after American troops are ultimately withdrawn, factions dissolve into civil war there, could we see another exit from the top of a U.S. embassy, this time in Baghdad? Is that
a fear
in your mind?
I think, you know, you raise a pretty useful specter that bothers many of us. We've had 15,000 killed and wounded in that operation. I want to make sure these soldiers, these Marines, these troops are backed up by the country and they achieve the outcome they set off to carry out. And I think it's doable, I might add. I don't see anything improbable about us actually building some form of government system that's responsive to the people, that doesn't represent a threat to its neighbors, and it won't build weapons of mass destruction 10 years from now. So I think we can do this, but we'd better stay in there and not have placed our young troops needlessly at risk and not achieve our purpose.
And in that fear, the Vietnam shadow still touches some part of your mind.
Well, I think so. Yeah, sure. But the nice part about it is, look, when you look at what the country's doing and thinking and saying, they have not walked away from these terrific young troops that we've got in combat. It's the hardest, most capable military we ever put into war. Now I think we have to continue to give them the resources and the political backing and the time to achieve what is primarily a political endeavor, to build a new Iraqi state.
General McCaffrey, thank you for joining us.
Good to be with you.
Retired four-star U.S. Army General and Vietnam veteran General Barry McCaffrey. David Greenway, I'm eager to get your response to that vantage. There are many vantages on the Vietnam War and Iraq tonight. We're talking about the 30th anniversary of the fall of Saigon, the lessons of Vietnam, their relevance in Iraq. You can join us. What should the Vietnam War tell us about the war in Iraq? We're at 1-800-423-8255. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking tonight about the 30th anniversary of the fall of Saigon, the lessons of Vietnam, their relevance in Iraq. You can join the conversation. Do the lessons of Vietnam apply in Iraq? How? And what are your memories, your thoughts on this Vietnam War anniversary? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. And I'm delighted to be joined tonight by David Greenway, longtime correspondent in Vietnam for Time Magazine and the Washington Post, later for many years with the Boston Globe, where he still has a foreign affairs column very widely read. David, you were there on that day. You heard General McCaffrey. Of course, he was there in a very different capacity from you in Vietnam. The lessons that he took away from Vietnam, choose a strategy that you're confident will win and be straight with the American people. Are those your lessons, and are they being observed?
I think there's a lot of sense in what he said. To talk about arrogance, he spoke about the arrogance of the civilian politicians during the Vietnam War. We had a powerful Secretary of Defense in McNamara.
Yes.
Who said in his book that he never knew anything about, misunderstood what the Vietnamese were about, didn't know anything about the country. People tried to tell him, but he wouldn't listen. Then we have now, 30 years later, Donald Rumsfeld, who people tried to tell him what he was going to get into in Iraq, and he wouldn't listen because the people, the experts, weren't ideologically hawkish enough for him. So we have bookends of arrogance in our Secretary of Defense's that's mind-boggling.
General McCaffrey says two things. The Iraq War, he says, has been badly done on the execution side. This is the former four-star general, highly decorated. But he says long-term it's mainly about political will. People who were alive during the Vietnam War will remember a lot of talk about political will. Is that the question, David?
Well, yes, of course. I mean, we have the power to do it, but will we have the political will? It depends. It's rather early yet. You know, we haven't been in there that long. The casualties haven't built up to an unacceptable level yet. You know, whether the political will can be sustained indefinitely, who knows? But his point, the general's point of squaring with the people, I mean, both Vietnam and Iraq were gone into with falsehoods. The Tonkin Gulf incident, mm-hmm. where LBJ took us into Vietnam on a bogus attack on American ships, we went into Iraq with bogus claims of weapons of mass destruction and connections with al-Qaeda. None of that was true.
And so there's another parallel. David Greenway, please stand by, if you would. I want to invite into our conversation from New York, Frances Fitzgerald. She was winner of the Pulitzer Prize and the National Book Award for her 1972 Fire in the Lake, The Vietnamese and the Americans in Vietnam. She reported on the Vietnam War for the Atlantic Monthly and the New Yorker magazine, where she's been a frequent contributor. She's on the editorial board of The Nation magazine. She's also author of Vietnam, Spirits of the Earth. Frances Fitzgerald, thank you for joining us this evening.
Thank you.
I wonder about your thoughts on this 30th anniversary of the fall of Saigon as we are now at war in Iraq.
Well, it seems to me that there are certain parallels. First of all, here we are, another American military occupation, battling a stubborn insurgency with no end in sight. It's another war of choice, not of necessity. I personally believe that no purpose in either case could be justified in terms of American national security interests.
Even with the oil that General McCaffrey mentions most prominently.
I believe very much that the 1991 war was justified in terms of national security, and particularly because of oil. But I think we stopped that threat, that Saddam Hussein was not going to be able to break out again in the way he did in Kuwait.
Mm.
And that, in practice, everyone knew that he didn't have nuclear weapons or the means to deliver them, so therefore no direct threat to the U.S.
Frances Fitzgerald, your famous book, Fire in the Lake, came out in 1972, near the end of the Vietnam War, and at that late date was describing to Americans Vietnamese culture. It was kind of a sociological approach and gave a much more in-depth history than most Americans had ever been exposed to. Kind of opening up all that we did not know about Vietnam, even though tens of thousands of American soldiers had already died there. Do you have a sense that the United States, that Washington, that the leadership in Washington understands Iraq today better than it understood Vietnam as it fought the Vietnam War?
Well, it's hard to imagine that perhaps they're learning now, but obviously they didn't understand it in the beginning, or they would have seen that they wouldn't have to just invade and go to Baghdad, but that they were going to find an insurgency growing against the occupation. I mean, that was clearly not understood.
David Greenway, you know Frances Fitzgerald's book well. You see how we're engaged in Iraq today. I put the same question to you. It took us years to really understand what was going on in Vietnam, even at the highest levels, it turns out, ultimately. Are we better plugged into what's actually happening with Iraq and Iraqis today?
No, of course we're not. And the big question will be, will the people who are for us grab the nationalist banner, or will the insurgents? And that's really going to tell the tale in Iraq. If the insurgency manages to wrap themselves in nationalism and win people over, then we've lost it. But if enough Iraqis are back what we're doing, then we have a chance.
Frances Fitzgerald, here we are. It's 2005. We're not nearly as deep into Iraq as the country was in Vietnam. Last night, I'm sure you heard, most of the country heard the president saying, I believe we're making really good progress in Iraq. A, do you agree? And B, take us back to the kind of messages Americans were being given by the White House leadership in the 60s when the progress was, in fact, not so good.
Well, that's the way the real lying in Vietnam went on, was by telling us that we were winning or about to win all the time, and never telling the American public how many troops they thought would even be able to maintain the stalemate, much less win the war. They had no estimate about winning the war, and they didn't tell us that. I think the thing that shocked me the most in the Pentagon Papers was McNamara saying in 1961 that he thought it would take 200,000 troops. To me, that I had no idea that they thought it was that serious at that early date. I want to say something else, which is
that
I think what we sort of lose sight of as we watch the American troops going to war is that in the case of Vietnam and Iraq, they're both political wars, and they are wars that are going to be decided, or one case was decided, by the Vietnamese themselves. There was no way that American troops could have won that war, and there's no way that American troops can win this one. The only way we can, quote-unquote, win this one is if the Iraqis who want a stable Iraq can put together a government that commands legitimacy of the great majority of Iraqis, and if we can isolate this sort of diehard insurgents. That's the only way it's going to work. And this is hard because it's a process we really can't control.
Let me just ask you, if I may, in the couple of minutes we have left, Francis Fitzgerald, when you sit back and look at where the country is now, 30 years after Saigon, I mean, Americans under 30 were not born. Americans under 40 scarcely have a memory of that war. Are you surprised to find the country in a war with the shape and the dimensions, the problems of the Iraq conflict?
I'm very surprised, particularly because the people who got us in there are plenty old enough to remember Vietnam, although very few of them served in it. I think that, again, General McCaffrey is right, that they did not, in both cases, didn't take the advice of their military officers. And another parallel, in neither case did we have allies.
Francis Fitzgerald, we're very grateful to you for joining us tonight. Thank you for being with us.
Thank you so much.
Francis Fitzgerald, winner of the Pulitzer Prize for her 1972 Fire in the Lake. She joined us from New York. We are joined now from Arlington, Virginia, by James Webb, former Secretary of the Navy under Ronald Reagan. He served in the 5th Marine Regiment in Vietnam, where he was Rifle Platoon and Company Commander west of Da Nang. He was awarded the Navy Cross, the Silver Star, 2 Bronze Stars, and 2 Purple Hearts. His most recent book, he's written many novels, worked with movies, taught, been very active on many fronts. His most recent book is Born Fighting, How the Scots-Irish Shaped America. James Webb, thank you for joining us tonight.
Good evening.
Your thoughts on this 30th anniversary of the fall of Saigon with the conflict underway in Iraq. What's on your mind tonight, James Webb?
Well, it's been interesting to listen to the people who preceded me. I have a sort of a different take on Vietnam versus Iraq. I went to Vietnam as a rifle platoon commander. I really didn't have a lot of political feelings at the time. I've continued to work on this issue all of my adult life. I've started working with the Vietnamese community here 25 years ago and been back to Vietnam many times.
Mm-hmm.
I think that when we look at Vietnam, particularly for the younger people in the country, it's necessary to try to put the mindset of the United States as it looked at the region following World War II. The entire East Asia was quite destabilized after World War II. You'd seen Japan sort of brought home from its aggression. A lot of the colonial powers had left, particularly in further Southeast Asia, and there were a number of communist movements in addition to Vietnam. The Chinese took over. The Chinese communists took over in China. There was an invasion in Korea. There was an attempted coup in Indonesia in 1965. There was a 10-year communist insurgency in Malaysia. So in that context, I think that strategically what we were attempting to do at the beginning of the Vietnam War made sense. And in fact, it's sort of interesting when you even look at public opinion polls all the way in 1972, August of 1972, which was 8 years after the Gulf of Tonkin, 74% of Americans agreed that it was important that South Vietnam not fall into the control of the communists. That was a Harris survey poll.
Although there was incredibly widespread opposition to the war at the same time. But you support going in to contain communism, but now you've written, Don't Attack Iraq.
I think however screwed up the war got, and I would agree with most people that its implementation was left a lot to be desired, and I think the strongest lesson to be learned was the abuse of the executive branch, which carries over into Iraq. And you could still say, when you were debating the Vietnam War all the way through, you still could say that the strategy of the United States was to deny a communist takeover of a country that we recognized. Now, if you look at Iraq, it's very difficult to say what exactly a strategy is. I mean, when General McCaffrey says that, you know, the lesson of Vietnam was that we should have a strategy where we would win,
yes.
There is no articulated strategy. It has shifted from one justification to another, and if you really think hard about it, the justification for going into this war was basically to provide a fig leaf for a long-term occupation force in that region, which is something that would be very unwise for the United States to attempt to do.
You wrote in November 2002, "Don't attack Iraq," yet we're there. So far, American public support for this war is quite different from Vietnam. But then again, as everyone said tonight, David Greenway, Francis Fitzgerald, General McCaffrey, it's relatively early days, despite the fact that there are many dead and wounded already.
Well, I think that, first of all, when General McCaffrey said that there were 150,000 wounded in Vietnam, there were 300,000 wounded in Vietnam.
Yes, more than, yes.
And when we talk about oil, I think people are starting to figure this out. In 2002, after 9/11, oil averaged $24 a barrel. Today it's up over $50 a barrel, and it's not simply because of the Chinese and the Indian economy. The American people have started to express grave concerns about this. The last survey I saw was that 53% of the people in this country believe that this war was not properly done, that it was unwise for us to have done it. I think in modern media age, the timeline on attitudes is a lot faster than it was during Vietnam.
President Bush said last night, "I believe we're making really good progress in Iraq." Do you agree? Do you believe it, James?
Well, my concern is this with respect to Iraq. It was not what we needed to do to address the problems that came out of 9/11. In fact, it was exactly what we did not need to do. First, with respect to Al-Qaeda, who were not connected to Saddam Hussein. When we put American forces in that region, we encouraged more terrorism. There was no insurgency in Iraq when we got there. And when you look at, in terms of grand strategy, our greatest difficulty is how we are going to balance our relationship with China. And the Chinese have really taken advantage of our being tied up there. When you look at the military specifically, and particularly the ground forces, I would call Iraq a strategic mousetrap. We have dumped a preponderance of our forces into one country that did not threaten us, and we have continued to rotate them through and call up the National Guard and Reserve to the point that we have lost a lot of our ability, what in the military we would call our maneuverability, to address problems elsewhere. And also, by the way, having put $300 billion of our economy into this one country. Those are my concerns, and I certainly hope that in the microcosm of Iraq, we can figure out a way to get out of there and then force the issue politically in the sense of these long-term bases that are now being built that no one's talking about.
James Webb, thank you very much for joining us tonight.
Thank you.
Former Secretary of the Navy, Vietnam veteran, highly decorated James Webb. He joined us from Arlington, Virginia. David Greenway, you've been listening patiently and knowingly. We had in General McCaffrey, a general who was essentially for Vietnam and for Iraq. In James Webb, also very experienced in the military, endorses Vietnam in principle against Iraq in principle. Are you surprised to hear that?
Well, no. I thought Webb made a lot of sense, in this Iraq war, that it is, in my view, made the United States less secure than it was, that it was a diversion from Al-Qaeda, that it's produced more terrorists, not less, and that this will come to haunt us one day. And now, as for Vietnam, remember when we first got into Vietnam, it was advisors.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that was justified, trying to have military advisors.
After the French pulled out, the communists kept coming, the U.S. trying to help the South.
Yeah, I think where the real turning point was when we sent big numbers of troops, hundreds of thousands, and to basically fight the war for the Vietnamese. I think that was where the war in Vietnam went south.
Are we avoiding that strategic mousetrap, as James Webb has it today?
Well, we'll see. I mean, the government that we've propped up there in Iraq, couldn't live without us. We're desperately trying to train Iraqi soldiers and police so that we can get out, but whether that'll succeed or not, who knows?
And today, the resonance of a 30th anniversary hanging over us. David Greenway, please stand by. We'll hear in a moment from Jonathan Schell. We're talking tonight about the 30th anniversary of the fall of Saigon, the lessons of Vietnam, and their relevance in Iraq 30 years on. What's your takeaway from the American failure in Vietnam? And what should the Vietnam War tell us about the war in Iraq? We're at 1-800-423-8255. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking tonight about the 30th anniversary of the fall of Saigon, the lessons of Vietnam, and their relevance in Iraq. You can join us tonight. Do the lessons of the Vietnam War apply in Iraq? How? And what are your memories, your thoughts on this Vietnam War anniversary? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. And I'm sorry, we've been keeping our callers waiting, but we've had a lot of terrific guests that we're fortunate enough to have tonight. David Greenway is with us. He was a longtime Vietnam War correspondent for Time Magazine, for The Washington Post, former foreign editor, national editor, editorial page editor of the Boston Globe, where he now has a foreign affairs column. We are joined now from New York by Jonathan Schell. He is peace and disarmament correspondent for The Nation magazine, a fellow at The Nation Institute. He reported on the Vietnam War for The New Yorker magazine, where he was a longtime contributing editor. He's author of The Real World, the classic reporting of the Vietnam War, and most recently, The Unconquerable World, Power, Nonviolence, and the Will of the People. Jonathan Schell, thank you for being with us tonight.
Good to be with you.
So we're trying to figure out what we should have learned from Vietnam that might have been applied in Iraq, how relevant it is, how irrelevant it is. As you join us on this 30th anniversary evening, Jonathan Schell, do these fit together? Is there learning that we can, should be taking from Vietnam to Iraq? Have we done it? Have we missed it?
Well, as I see it, there was one huge lesson. There were many lessons, but one that was especially important from the Vietnam War, and that was the limits of military power, especially in situations of conquest and occupation. The fact is that in Vietnam, and in fact in countries throughout the world in the 20th century, it turned out that local peoples just did not like to be occupied and ruled by foreign powers. And on top of that, they had the means and the will to prevent that. I'm still astonished. I happened to be at a panel up at Yale where we saw some photographs taken by one Nayan Chanda of the fall of Saigon, mm-hmm. and of the North Vietnamese troops coming in. And I still find it just astonishing to reflect that the greatest military power of its day could not prevail in that small, poor country. And I think there are deep, deep lessons from that that we did learn for a while, but since then we have sort of vigorously rejected and restored, I think, what are a number of very dangerous illusions regarding the capacities of military power.
Jonathan, we're trying to remain very aware tonight that Americans under 30 were not even born when Saigon fell, and under 40 would have only been 10 years old, barely aware. Remind listeners under 40 where we were in terms of U.S. troops when Saigon fell in 1975.
Well, the troops had actually left. That is, the ground troops had left after the peace agreement of 1972. Mm-hmm. And after 1973, the U.S. Air Force was prevented by Congress from continuing its activity. So really, the United States had left, and the South Vietnamese government was left to face its foes. And what happened was, and it was so astonishing to witness it, was that the South Vietnamese government, when the North Vietnamese attacked in 1975, was not really, you couldn't say that they were defeated. The collapse preceded the defeat everywhere. That government sort of went down like a house of cards in a high wind. There really was no fighting. The only violence, and that was considerable, by the way, were South Vietnamese troops rioting and looting in the cities of South Vietnam as they tried desperately to pour down through Vietnam to South Vietnam to Saigon to save their skins. So it was really a kind of watching a house of cards collapse rather than an army being defeated in a war. And that spectacle really goes to the heart of what was wrong with the whole American policy there, because it was the failure ever to be able to politically win in Vietnam that meant that no government that had supported the United States could conceivably withstand our withdrawal and stand on its own. And that's why the whole thing just crumbled away at the first sign of opposition virtually after we'd left, after our Air Force in particular had left.
David Greenway, you saw that same crumbling, and it seems terribly relevant now. President Bush talks, all the U.S. leadership talks a lot about turning this over to the Iraqis. Everyone was happy to see a successful election there, a new government struggling and partially coming in to being this week, but also an enormous amount of violence this week and just in the last 24 hours around Baghdad and Iraq. Of course, the American goal now is to hand over, get out.
Well, Tom, that was exactly the hope of the Americans in Vietnam, Vietnamization, it was called. We were going to turn it over to the Vietnamese and get out. And we did, and the whole thing collapsed behind us. In Iraq, you've basically got three factors there, not just a north and a south like you had in Vietnam. Mm. You have the Sunnis and the Shia and the Kurds. Mm. And I would think the danger will come is when we've said Iraqification has worked, we're now leaving, and a couple of years later, fighting breaks out between those factions, and a civil war ensues, and the same and terrible chaos with terrible results for America's position in the world.
But maybe
that would be my big fear.
That would be the fear, and maybe we hope it will be different this time. Our callers have been so patient. I want to invite them in. Steve is calling from Plymouth, Massachusetts. Hi, Steve. You're on the air.
Yeah, hi. Thanks. You actually have now started to talk about what it is I'd hoped you would talk about, and that is the relevance of the end game. You know, the beginning of the conversation was mostly about the relevance of how we got in and how we conducted it. But what really concerns me is indeed the Bush administration is following what I'll coin a second Nixon administration policy of basically starting to plan to get out before we figured out how it's not going to end in the same ignominious way that Vietnam did, with the same catastrophic results for the people who live there.
So does that mean, Steve, when President Bush talks about getting out, you're taking him at face value? You think he really means that? Of course, some people say, no, we're going to have bases there for a long, long time.
I'll say this. I don't think he's serious about what it's going to take to defeat that insurgency. He hasn't asked Americans to sacrifice. He here and there we get the indication is skimping on what it really takes to have the military force adequately equipped and frankly sized that we already have there. I don't think he's serious.
Steve, let us pick it up. Jonathan Schell, we heard earlier in the hour from General Barry McCaffrey, 4-star U.S. Army general, saying that his lesson from Vietnam, it's all about hanging in. And if we hang in Iraq, we'll be all right. But, of course, our caller, Stephen, is right. President Bush is talking as well about getting out. This is always a tricky balance.
Well, you could equally make an argument that the longer we hang in, the worse things are going to get, and that's for a very simple reason, which is that, and this is a paradox that appeared during the Vietnam War as well, and that is that the more the United States does things for the people there, the less they're able to do it for themselves. On the other hand, the sooner the United States leaves, the sooner they will be required to do whatever it is that they are going to do. But I could make a very strong argument, I think, that staying the course means worsening the final outcome. Certainly that was true in Vietnam, although there, quite honestly, I think the final outcome was pretty much in the cards from the very beginning, which is that the North and the NLF would take over.
So David Goodman, I've got to put the same question to you. That answer will make our caller Steve nervous, I think. Staying the course may make things worse.
There's certainly a possibility of that as resentment against us rises. Maxwell Taylor, General Maxwell Taylor, told Kennedy about there was a plimsoll line. A plimsoll line is when a line on a ship. If you load the ship more than that, in the water, it becomes unstable and will tip over. And he felt that American participation in Vietnam could reach a plimsoll line. Mm-hmm. And that's exactly what happened. We decided to fight the war for them, and then we tried to, no, we then decided we were going to have them fight it. And the whole thing was a disaster. And there's a very great danger that if we stick around more and more and more, Iraqis will turn against us.
George is calling from Londonderry, New Hampshire. Hi, George, you're on the air. Hello, George, are you there, my friend?
Hear me?
Yes, George, we've got you now. What's on your mind?
Okay. I wanted to say that the parallels between Vietnam and Iraq are just amazing to me. If you look at how we got super escalated in the Vietnam War, it was based on the Gulf of Tonkin incident.
Of course.
And Johnson asking for the War Powers Act, and it was proven that the Gulf of Tonkin incident never happened, and the Johnson administration knew that. And take a look at getting the Bush going to Congress and getting the ability to go to war in Iraq, and the similarities are incredible. And it's all and Bush was able to sell the war to the American people with no data on the table.
So untruths at the beginning of each, but here we are. What lessons? What can we learn now that's helpful, George?
I think the biggest thing is, for me, the real common denominator is that the American public is naive when it comes to issues like this and can't think their way through to look for the reality. And I think the real lesson, and the lesson that everybody is missing on the show so far, is very simple, is that war simply doesn't work. It never has and it never will. It's not the answer.
George, we've got it. Jonathan Schell, I think that speaks to your most recent theme, The Unconquerable World. You began to kind of articulate that. But let me put to you the question I put to Francis Fitzgerald earlier. 30 years after the fall of Saigon, here we are. An enormous number of American troops in Iraq. Are you simply surprised to find us in this situation? Could you have imagined in 75 that this would happen in 2005? Did you think Americans had learned something else? Or is this just the price of being a superpower, the price of vigilance, the American way?
Well, I think that for many years, the United States really did deeply learn lessons from the Vietnam War. And in fact, we really didn't have interventions on a large scale until the first Bush administration. And I think actually the military probably learned as deeply as any of the sectors of American society. I think the so-called Powell Doctrine, stating that military forces shouldn't be used for political purposes, that there should be an exit strategy and so on, really represented what he and the military had learned from the Vietnam War. But at the same time, I think that there was a very, very vigorous effort, and I think the first Gulf War was a milestone in this, to overcome these lessons, which soon came to be called a syndrome. That is a kind of sickness.
The Vietnam syndrome.
The idea was that we had become pusillanimous, we'd become weak, we'd lost our nerve because of Vietnam. We had to regain confidence again in the utility of military power, of which we had more than any country in the world. And therefore, I think an illusion developed on the basis of this sort of mislearning or repression of learning of the lessons, that the United States in the post-Cold War period could really pretty much run the world because it had almost like a monopoly on effective military power. And I think that it's this delusion that is unraveling now in the Bush 2 years.
David Greenway, you quote the U.S. ambassador to South Vietnam, to Saigon, Henry Cabot Lodge, writing, it remains true that our only sure guides to a present which so often seems bewildering are the lessons, the often terrible lessons, of the past. Jonathan Schell's not so sure about how we absorbed and are using the lessons of Vietnam. What's most important? We've just got a minute here. What's most important in your mind for Americans to hang on to from the hard-earned, high blood cost lessons of that earlier war as we face Iraq?
Tom, my favorite book about Vietnam is a novel by Graham Greene called The Quiet American. And the Quiet American is a naive fellow who thinks bringing bombs to Saigon, this is during the French days, somehow the bombs can bring democracy. And he goes on and on about democracy. And the wise, old, cynical European tells him that the Vietnamese, what they really want is enough rice. They don't want to be shot at. They want one day to be much the same as another. They don't want our white skins around telling them what they want. And sometimes when I hear our administration telling us what the Iraqi people want, I remember those words.
As President Bush says, democracy, and yet it is ever beguiling to imagine, to hope, that democracy will be the answer.
Yes, I hope that too.
It's been fascinating having both of you tonight. Jonathan Schell in New York, longtime Vietnam War correspondent, author most recently of The Unconquerable World. Thank you very much for being with us tonight.
Thank you.
And David Greenway joining us tonight from North Haven, Maine, longtime correspondent in Vietnam for Time Magazine and The Washington Post, more recently with The Boston Globe. David, thank you so much for your time. Very grateful to you.
Thank you, Tom.
We end this hour with a listen back to more sounds from the streets of Saigon as the city fell, from the airport to the American Embassy 30 years ago tomorrow.
The embassy let us know that the signal for the evacuation would be Armed Forces Radio playing Bing Crosby singing "I'm Dreaming of a White Christmas." I thought it was a joke.
I'm dreaming of a white Christmas.
This is an NBC News hotline report. I'm Mike Moss. Communist forces reportedly have invaded Saigon in heavy street fighting in what appears to be the beginning of the final battle for the South Vietnamese capital.
Saigon came under attack about a half an hour after President Minh was sworn in at the presidential palace.
The Saigon government surrendered unconditionally to the Viet Cong, ending 30 years of bloodshed.
It's requesting permission to evacuate.
Some Americans who pushed towards the bus tried to pull their Vietnamese wives and children along with them.
As soon as the rear stairway was lowered, the stampede of terrorized people tried to storm the plane. From the cockpit, the pilots reported by radio that the situation was out of control.
Teenagers climbed over low roofs from the French embassy next door and leapt into the American embassy compound.
Two ships down, one just crashed and burned.
And this presence here ended this morning, about 3 hours ago, as a U.S. Marine helicopter took out the last group of Marines from the roof of the U.S. Embassy.
Get out!
Today in Saigon, the helicopters coming in the darkness, on the helicopter, helicopter pad at the U.S. Embassy, signify the end to this adventure, and it is a very sad ending.
And may all your Christmases be
well. Jesus Christ, I say, what else?
Sounds from Saigon at the end of the American involvement in Vietnam, April 30th, 1975. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.
On Point is a production of WBUR Boston and NPR, National Public Radio.